I tell my patients that anecdotally, okay, about 85 to 90% of patients report feeling better.
That's significant.
That is. Now, but when I say feeling better, that doesn't mean that every symptom has left them. But they say, no, okay, this part's improved. I'm sleeping better. My memory's better. I've noticed my hair loss isn't as bad, right? But does that mean that every symptom has left them? No.
Hey everyone, I'm Jessie Johnstone.
And I'm Marie Froese. We are two curious people always talking to each other about ways to improve our health, keep our relationship strong, be better parents, and keep ourselves feeling confident.
If we aren't talking about the latest and greatest beauty procedure or how to handle a situation with our kids, we're messaging back and forth about the latest current event.
To help us work through all the noise and ensure we are becoming our best, most informed selves, we discuss a new topic with an industry expert every week on the podcast.
Every topic is on the table. There is no TMI in this space.
Hello.
Hi, Marie. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so excited for this episode to come out.
I am too. So this episode is with Dr. Brown, Dr. Erin Brown, and we're talking about explant surgery.
Yeah. Tell me more about breastplant illness and explant surgery.
And instead of kind of going over our weeks, because I've literally...
Nothing happened.
No.
Let's just get into it. When people have asked me what topics we were going to discuss on the podcast, this subject, without question, was the one people were most interested in, explant surgery, which is the removal of the implant and often includes removal of the capsule as well. And breast implant illness is why people are choosing to do this surgery in most cases. And we have a great conversation with Dr. Brown about both the surgery and the illness.
Yeah, because what sparked it was my personal experience. So everyone that finds out that I did have breast implants are like so surprised, because like I just can't picture you going and getting breast implants. So what happened was, when I was in high school, like I actually had really large breasts and I played sports and I was so insecure about it and so uncomfortable. And it was something I complained about a lot. I had to wear like two or three sports bras when I was running. And so I think the government actually covered for me to go get a breast reduction. So I had that.
Because you had back, such bad back.
I had back pain and I just was like, I was known for the girl in school with big boobs. I hated the attention it brought. It wasn't proportionate to my body. It just didn't make any sense for me. So I had it taken out. And again, at that time too, like you're so young, you don't think about the side effects of it. Like even when the surgeon did it, he's like, there's a chance you won't breastfeed. I was like, I don't care. I just this want
is
this
for
out.
This is for the breast reduction or this is for the explants?
This is for the breast reduction.
Okay.
So this was when I was in grade 11.
Wow,
I did this. So like beginning of grade 11. And so I had the surgery and the surgeon did not do a great job. And I just kind of felt like when everything settled, I kind of felt like, okay, now I have these like deflated balloons. Like I wasn't really confident in it. And so then I went back and was like, okay, how do we fix this? And then they said, okay, the only way we could fix this is by putting an implant in. And so that's what started my journey with breast implants.
Okay.
And so then I had my implants in, and fast forward, I would say like pretty soon after that, like I started experiencing, so I got the implants and put in like years later after my breast reduction. And I started experiencing like weird symptoms. Like suddenly I had like really weird digestive issues. I had allergies to garlic and onions and things I never had experienced before. Like I felt like I was always sick.
And at this point, you're not connecting anything to the breast implants.
No. So I saw different naturopaths. I tried absolutely everything. I experienced some weight gain. Like I just felt fluffy. I felt like I was gaining weight in areas that I never did before, even though I was extremely, extremely active. Like this was like the height of like my fitness career. Like I thought it was iron deficiency or like hypothyroid, and all my tests came back clear. Even with the allergy test, like everything came back clear. So it just didn't make any sense to me. And then I started my pregnancy journey, right? So I tried to get pregnant, and I know we've kind of discussed this a little bit before, but I had like 6 miscarriages and a stillbirth, all unexplained. Like I did every test, everything came back clear. I was totally healthy. It was all unexplained, even my stillbirth. And yeah, there was just no explanation for it, which was really discouraging. After my daughter Evie was born, so she's turning 4 next month, I started feeling like really bad hip pain, like to the point where it progressed that I couldn't walk a lot of the days. Like I remember being at a point in my life where I never really experienced chronic pain, and people would talk about their pain, and I was like, okay. Like it didn't mean anything, but this was like all encompassing to the point where I couldn't sleep at night. I could barely lift my daughter. I couldn't exercise. I could barely walk. I walked with a cane for years. I became depressed. I had insane anxiety because I felt trapped in my body. Like there's no way I can like run and chase after my daughter. Dallas and I couldn't go for walks or hikes or like everything revolved around my pain. And even sitting at a restaurant, like I would have to pee so badly and I would just wait for people to not look at me getting up from the table because I hated my limp. I hated people watching me. Like I remember Dallas being like, "Hey, just try and walk normally." And I just could not. Like I was dragging my leg off the ground. And I had done absolutely everything. Like I paid thousands of dollars for PRP, which was like the most painful thing I ever experienced. I had like saw neurologists. I saw like every type of therapist.
I remember because every week it was like you were going to somebody new and yes. and trying to keep hope that they were going to be able to figure something out.
Oh, the physio, the chiro, like the injections, everything, cortisone injections, like absolutely everything I tried. And I just felt like I was trapped in my body. I felt so hopeless. I'm like, how is this my life now? Like, so now I'm 31 and I'm not going to be able to like ever run again. I'm not going to be able to walk normally again. I'm going to have to wear sneakers for the rest of my life. Like the footwear, everything revolved around my hip. And I was at this point, I actually contacted Andrew Hemming, who's going to be on the podcast. And I messaged him and I was like, "Hey, I'm at my wit's end. Do you have any recommendations of anybody who can help me? I've seen everyone." And he recommended me to Darren, who's an osteopath, and he's in Langley, which is awesome because all the practitioners I was seeing was like Burnaby, Vancouver, so much driving. So I contacted him and, you know, in his bio, it talks about how he worked with professional athletes and NHL players. And I just messaged him and said, "Hey, I'm at my wit's end. I need someone to take me seriously. I will pay anything. Can you treat me like I'm a professional athlete and I need to be on the ice in 3 months?" Like that's all I wanted was for someone to take me seriously because scans weren't showing what I was feeling. And so I went in and saw him and he did a full assessment. And have you ever been to an osteopath?
No.
Oh, it's insane. Like, I don't know if I'll ever see a physio or a chiro with like a major injury.
What is an osteopath?
That's a really good question. Let's Google it. I always just say it's like voodoo stuff. The way I would describe it is that they definitely treat your body in a more holistic approach. Like I feel like if you go see a physio and you're like, "Hey, my hip hurts," they're doing injections in your hip. They're maybe looking at your glute and your quad, but that's it. They're not looking at anything else. Same with a chiro. Whereas an osteopath from your head to your toes assesses everything. And it's honestly voodoo. I don't know how it works. He would be doing the weirdest things to me. And I'm like, he's like moving my ribs around. And I'm like, how do I feel so much better? I can't even explain it. So he did a really, really thorough assessment of me. And then at the end of it, he's like, "Okay," which I told him I had breast implants. And I was lying on his table and he's like, "Hey, lift your left leg." And that's one of my complaints is I couldn't lift my leg off the ground. That's why I thought it was nerve damage, because no matter how hard I tried to lift my leg off the ground, it wouldn't even lift an inch off the ground, which is so wild. It was like dead muscle. So he spent about 30 to 40 minutes massaging my scar tissue, like where my incision was, which felt like someone was tearing my skin. It was so painful. And then he's like, "Lift your leg." And I could lift my leg off the ground, first time in 3 years. And he was like, "Okay, you're going to hate me for saying this, but honestly, I'm listening to your symptoms. I'm listening about your miscarriages, your digestive issues, your allergies, your hip. I honestly think it's all related to your implants." And I couldn't even believe it. I was like, and at that time, you know, it was more popular. People were talking about breast implant illness and I was already open to getting them removed. And I just said, "Okay, well, let's just continue with treatment and see how things go and progress." So I saw him 5 days a week for 3 months. I did an intensive program, which I did see. I made progress, but he kept saying we kept hitting a wall. It was like I had to get treatment 5 days a week in order to make any progress. And it wasn't like normally someone would be like, "Okay, let's go to one time a week or whatever." And if I didn't see him 1 week, I could barely walk the next.
You'd regress.
Yeah, I'd regress. So my whole thing was, I just want to get pregnant and then I'll get my implants taken out. Any woman would understand why. And so then I had two miscarriages back to back. And that was when I was under the care of like the women's hospital.
Because you had already had at that point, like I was six miscarriages.
Yeah, and I was like, I was a patient at the recurring pregnancy law center. The OB there was like, you're in good hands. Everything's good. I can guarantee that if we do this, then you're going to get pregnant and everything will be fine. And after I had those two miscarriages, I felt so hopeless. And I just said to Dallas, I'm like, I think I just need to try taking out my implants. I'm so depressed not being able to move. And so I did a lot of research and it was so affirming. I would just bawl my eyes out reading this Facebook page. It's like breast implant illness by Nicole or something. And there's like hundreds of thousands of women where they are experiencing the same thing as me. It is so insane. I would read people's stories about chronic hip pain. I couldn't even walk. I couldn't even get out of bed. The moment I took out my implants, I went on a 5K walk for the first time in 10 years. And I just cried because I was pain free. And I was like, oh my goodness. Like, because I was constantly researching. I'm not the type of person to like experience pain and be like, boo hoo, woe is me. This is my life now. Like I was actively trying to find answers. And so it was a no-brainer. I was looking at these results, even fertility, all of that stuff. I'm like, hey, I'm just going to do it. And obviously it was a risk because it's not cheap. It's about $15,000. And I booked an appointment with Dr. Brown and I had my surgery in September and it transformed my life. It was instant. And I also was like very open-minded to the fact that it might not heal me. Immediately after the surgery, like I actually stopped taking any painkillers after one day because my one goal was to see if my hip felt better. And yeah, so I stopped taking pain meds and I was like, Dallas, I have no pain. I'm like, watch me walk. And like my limp just like immediately went away. And I felt so energized and so good. And then I waited to get my period and I was like, okay, let's try and get pregnant. I got pregnant right away. And I just knew in my heart, I'm like, I'm not going to miscarry. I think my body was attacking itself. It was not happy with those implants and the scar tissue. And it made me sick. And here so I am crazy. Today.
It's just so crazy how it can affect certain people and they don't know why it affects certain people. Because I too have breast implants and I haven't had any issues. And that's the issue for this whole situation is that some people get it, some people don't, and they don't know why.
Yeah. I just think it's really important to be aware that this could happen. And
100%.
I think there's just more education now. Like I was listening to a podcast last week of a plastic surgeon in LA who does like, she is an incredible surgeon. And she just said, she's like, plastic surgery has its purpose. And she's like, obviously I'm for plastic surgery. I am a surgeon, but now people are getting too greedy. It's like, you have a great set of boobs and you're just like, I just want it a little bit bigger. Or they have like, you know, great elasticity in their stomach. Like I just want to get rid of this fat. And there's always a consequence, whether you're just going to see it now or 15, 20 years down the road. I mean, some are more extreme than others, but you'll pay for it in certain ways. Like it is a lot for your body to go through.
I agree. That's why I'm saying like it's such a personal decision and it's a serious decision. It's an expensive decision. There can be health consequences. So you really need to be fully informed. And as Dr. Brown will say, you really need to see somebody that's very reputable. We say, you know, it's not something you shop around for a better price. You find the best person, that you do all the research, you understand all the possible complications, and you make a really, really informed choice for yourself.
Yes. And I think what my desire would be for this episode is for women who do have breast implants, who feel like there's something wrong with them. Like they feel like their body's shutting down, whether it's chronic pain or fatigue or digestive issue or whatever it may be, and you've searched out every type of answer and doctor and naturopath and tried every cleanse and you haven't found an answer. What Dr. Brown had said before, even when I saw him, he's like, I'm always everyone's last resort, because who would have thought that it's breast implants? So I hope that this helps you.
Yeah, it will give you a clear picture of what explant surgery entails. And
I want to say I'm really happy with my results.
Yeah.
Like I'm very happy with my results. It was the best decision I've ever made. It completely transformed my life.
Will you put a picture up on Instagram?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Okay. Well, we hope everybody enjoys this interview with Dr. Brown and gets a lot out of it.
And yeah. Share it with your friends if you feel like this might be an answer for somebody. Good evening, Dr. Brown. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing very well. How about you guys?
Good. Thank you.
Great. Thanks for fitting us into your busy schedule. This is a really exciting episode for me, particularly because for those of you who don't know, Dr. Aaron Brown is a surgeon in Abbotsford, British Columbia, and he actually performed my explant surgery in September, which I don't even know if you know this, Dr. Brown, but it actually changed my life in more ways than I can count. I was in had chronic hip pain before my surgery, like could barely walk, had a limp for 3 years. I had over 8 miscarriages and a stillbirth, and my pain completely went away. I'm about 30 weeks pregnant.
Oh, congratulations. I didn't know that.
Thank you. It happened really quickly after that. So I just felt like taking my implants out healed my body. I'm sure you've heard many people's testimonies that are similar to mine over the years. Can you introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about yourself, where you work, your practice, what you specialize in.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I'm Dr. Aaron Brown. I'm a plastic surgeon. I'm based out of Abbotsford, British Columbia. I did my training at the University of Manitoba, both for medical school and residency. And then when I was done my training, my wife and I looked at the job market and the opportunities, and we decided we wanted to escape winter but not leave Canada. So we moved out to Abbotsford, BC. And though we miss family and friends in Winnipeg, we're not moving back anytime soon.
Nice.
Okay, so breast implant illness, this is a topic that's circulating, blogs, podcasts, social media. Is it actually a medical diagnosis, or is this just a term that we're using?
Well, it's probably the hottest topic in plastic surgery right now, right? It kind of hit the plastic surgery world like a storm about 5-6 years ago, where patients started to request having their implants removed for breast implant illness. And 5 or 6 years ago, that term was almost unheard of. You know, certainly patients would request to have their implants out, but never before with the term breast implant illness attached to it. The medical literature hasn't definitively proven breast implant illness. So there's a lot of debate amongst plastic surgeons. You know, what is this entity? How do we test for it? Because right now we don't have a test for it. And how do we prove that a patient has it? And it's been a challenge within the plastic surgery community to determine what is this and how can we best help our patients.
And did you start off by putting implants in these women and then did you transition to take them out? Or
my practice really started in 2008. And I think like most plastic surgeons, really you start by taking a lot of trauma call, doing a lot of skin cancers, and just building up your confidence with surgical skills. In the area I was in, yes, there I put in a few implants and still put in a few implants. But really, I wasn't that busy with it because I was early on into my practice. I'm only 14 years in. About 5-6 years ago, a patient approached me with the request to take out her breast implants. I never heard the term breast implant illness before. Remember, at this point, 5-6 years ago, it really wasn't that on the radar as much as it is now. Her request was very reasonable, right? Like she wanted her implants out. She wanted to have the caps removed. Okay, well, this is a reasonable request. If you're asking to have them out, I'm happy to take them out. We did, and she expressed how happy she was, but also how she felt a lot better afterwards. And that was my first exposure to someone with breast implant illness, who she said she felt better. And then from there, it kind of snowballed where more and more patients got my name and came to me to the point where I think by this point, I've probably done 600 or 700 explants in the last 6 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been busy. It's been fun.
So taking the capsule out, you mentioned that. So can you talk a little bit more about what's involved in the surgery? Because I know that you have to go to someone who specializes in explant surgery to take out the capsule or else you won't hear properly. Can you talk about that?
Well, I think like in any operation, when you're choosing a surgeon, the first thing you want to ask the surgeon is, have you done this operation before? I think that's a very valuable question, right? Because if you asked me to do your nose job, I would send you elsewhere. I'm sure I've done a few. I don't enjoy doing them, so I send them elsewhere. And then a question that rarely gets asked, but I think it's an important question to ask of a surgeon, especially your plastic surgeon when they're doing a private operation, do you enjoy doing this operation? Right? Because there's operations I get asked to do that I do not enjoy doing. So those ones I also turn down. So you want to find a surgeon who's done a lot of them, but also enjoys doing them because they're going to spend the time and make the commitment to doing their best possible job, right? the amalgamation or the marriage of experience plus enjoyment of doing the procedure, I think, is most valuable. In the breast implant illness community, the patients who come to me, they, as part of their journey to health, want not just the implant removed, the breast implant, but they also want what we call the capsule. Now, the capsule is the foreign body reaction your body has had to the implant. Okay. So I'm going to, from a very basic immunology level, when your implant is first placed in, your body looks at this thing and says, what the heck is this? And it has an immune response to it. Now, the immune response to anything foreign in our body is the same. We map it out, and then initially we try to eat it, right? So if we have a bacteria or a virus in our body, we map it out, and then we eat it. That's how we heal. Now, with a breast implant, it quickly realizes the macrophages say, well, I can't eat this, so I want to ignore this. So the body then puts an immunological barrier around this thing so it can just say, I don't see anything here, I'm going to ignore it. Hence, you develop this capsule. And for the patients who come to me who are concerned, suffering from breast implant illness, part of their journey to health includes wanting not just the implant, but the capsule removed. And they want it removed using a term called an on-block capsulectomy, where the entire thing is removed. Now, on-block is a term in the medical world really reserved for taking out a cancer, right? You're taking out a cancer on-block in one piece. So for some surgeons, and myself included, we struggled with this term on-block because it's typically reserved for a cancer operation. But with time and acceptance, sure, you're requesting this. But for me, it's very important when I see a patient who wants done to have a discussion with them that, yes, I can make this commitment, but there may be variables that impact whether or not this can be done safely, including the fact that there's parts of the operation that are a bit risky, working along the ribs, that can lead to an injury, potentially a pneumothorax, that may not make what you're requesting possible.
So does the capsule, is it like sticky against the ribs? Because I think I remember, I don't know if it was you who mentioned this or someone else, about actually like being really delicate when you're removing it and scraping it off of the ribs.
Yes, I hear the term scraping off the ribs on a regular. I like to say it's a meticulous dissection off the ribs. But, you know, this is scar tissue that is formed between the implant and your body. And along for patients who have subpectoral implants, this is very adherent to the ribs, but also the intercostal space. So that dissection in that area can become not only very difficult, but also potentially risky if you puncture through the intercostal space and potentially injure the lungs that are sitting right below you at that point.
So have you ever punctured a rib? Has that ever happened to you?
Well, yeah. Now, thank you. Let me just knock on wood. No, I've been very fortunate. I have not given someone a pneumothorax yet with this operation. And I say yet because it's a known complication and any surgeon can have any complication. So every time I go in with the mindset, is this going to be the one? I know the slowdown points. And I think it becomes safer the more you, well, it obviously becomes safer the more you do. But every time you go in, you got to respect where you are and make sure you are taking your time and don't puncture someone's lung, because that'll turn a good day into a bad day very quickly.
I'm just going to go into layman's terms, because what you've been describing, if I'm following correctly, is under the muscle.
Correct.
And so how does it differ then if the implant is above the muscle?
Much easier, because you have this pectoralis muscle that is sitting with the implant above it, so that you have this huge layer of muscle that, like, you would really have to be on a misadventure at that point to get through and puncture the lung. So when a patient comes to me and says, my implants are above the muscle, I just put a smile on my face and say, fantastic. I know this one's a lot safer to do. There are still other risks that are involved with the operation, but I know the big risk of puncturing someone's lung, that's vastly diminished.
And it's still the same thing about getting that on-block capsule removed.
For the patients who want the on-block and that's what they want, that is a commitment I make to them. It's an important part of their journey, so it's an important part to me.
And so, what would you recommend if somebody comes in and they don't know about that? Do you say to them, have you considered this? Or do you just kind of go with what they wish? Or what do you advise if somebody's coming in and they don't really know what to do?
I have a lot of patients who come to me. The majority of them, 99%, come pre-educated with the desire to have the entire capsule come out. So in fact, a few patients have actually booked elsewhere because I'm like, well, what would you like done? Would you have like the capsule removed? And they're like, how did you not know that? Of course I wanted the capsule. So I know there's quite a few that when I asked that question, they were taken aback. Like, why would you ask that question? Of course. However, there is about 1% who know they're like, no, I've never heard of this. I just want the implant removed. I'm not suffering from breast implant illness. I'm just, for me, I'm done with having implants. They're no longer part of who I am.
Got it. So if someone wants to get their implants taken out and they meet with you, what are the risks other than?
So the general risks of surgery, plastic surgery.
For every operation you do, you have your standard risk that could apply to any operation, right? So the anesthetic type, in this case, a general anesthetic where you're put to sleep. And where I operate, the anesthetist will meet you ahead of time to discuss that. Then anytime you made a cut on the skin, there's a risk of infection, there's a risk of bleeding, you will have a scar, which I think is a big misnomer. You know, people think they've seen a plastic surgeon, there will be no scar afterwards. No, we will try to hide the scar, but and we will try to use meticulous surgical technique to minimize the scar, but there will be still a scar. Anytime you take out a foreign body or remove something from a body, there's a risk of seromas or hematomas. So those are fluid collections that could develop that require me to take you back to the operating room. So Maria, as you remember, you had drainage tubes in to help diminish that risk. And then anytime you induce a chemical sleep and operate on someone, there's a risk of getting blood clots in your legs called a deep vein thrombosis. So those are kind of the risks that you could quote. If I had a medical student with me and said, hey, go quote me 5 risks of an operation, without knowing what operation we're performing, they should be able to quote those, you know, 4 or 5 right there. Then you're going to have your risks specific to this operation. So when you're doing the dissection, as discussed, there's a risk of puncturing into the lung. Okay. I also tell patients there's a risk that I may not be able to safely do the en-bloc capsulectomy. Maybe it's too adherent, risk of puncturing the lung. So I might not be able to safely complete what you're requesting me to do. And I'm not going to take your desire to have the entire capsule removed over top of your safety. Now, the other thing, patients who come to me with breast implant illness, because it's not documented in the medical literature and because I can't do a definitive medical test, I can't make any guarantees that I will make a patient better. And that's one of the biggest kind of steps we have to take with the patient-doctor relationship is we're doing an operation where I can't guarantee that one of the biggest things you're coming for me to see is if you get better, I can't make that guarantee. And then finally, the aesthetics appearance of a breast, right? And I don't want to get into the aesthetics of is a bigger breast better than a smaller breast, because breasts are beautiful and wonderful things, right? They really are. But when you do this extensive dissection to take out a breast implant and the capsule, it's a long scar you're putting in someone's inframammary fold, so the crease underneath the breast. So there is a chance, and I discuss with this all patients, there's a risk of indents, tethers, puckers, or ripples on your breast. And I go so far as to say they could be breasts that when you look in the mirror, they can be emotionally devastating to look at.
Wow.
Now, there's things we can do, breast lift, whether it be a lower pull tightening versus a full breast lift, like the anchor scar. But that discussion has to be had because you can't just, as a surgeon, you can't just brush over our stuff and say, well, this, everything's going to be great. You'll be fine, because that's a disservice to a patient. The patient has to make an informed decision to decide what's best for them.
Do you do fat grafting?
I do, but never at the same time.
Okay, really? Okay.
Yes, for a few reasons. One, when I'm doing this operation, one main reason, when I do this operation, you're opening up a lot of tissue planes. You're doing a massive dissection. The blood supply is going to be a little bit in peril, so to speak. Now, if I were to fat graft at the same time, I'm going to liposuction out fat from somewhere in your body and inject it in. Well, that fat needs to pick up the blood supply. But surgery, a big operation has just happened where the blood supply has been altered a bit. And in best case scenario, a fat graft is going to take at about the rate of 50%. But now you've just created an environment where the blood supply isn't that great. Well, I wouldn't guarantee that 50% anymore. It might be 10%. I think it's better to stage it, wait 6 months to a year, and then consider going back for fat grafting.
Right. Okay. So back to breast implant illness, you said you've done over 600 explants. What are the most common symptoms that you're seeing these women come to you with their breast implant illness?
Oh, there's quite a few. a lot of patients will discuss having decreased energy, okay, hair loss, appetite changes, weight fluctuations, usually up, but occasionally down, okay, fatigue, loss of libido, headaches, bowel issues, irritable bowel type issues. Brain fog is a big one where they just, you know, they forget kind of day to day what they're doing.
What about fertility and muscle pain, joint pain?
Those are also interesting common complaints. And fascinating, you're not my first patient to tell me that they're able to get pregnant afterwards. Awkwardly, I had one patient kind of post on the internet, Dr. Brown got me pregnant.
Oh, no.
And, you know, she was quite happy that she was pregnant. And I was very excited for her, but I said, maybe correct your wording.
Right? Yeah, can you do a disclaimer?
Brown, he did not get you pregnant. My wife does, you know, has access to the internet as well. So let's not get that out there.
Is there a hypothesis about what's causing this?
100%. One of the hypotheses that's being put forward, okay, is that, remember we talked a little bit earlier about the idea that your body has had an immune reaction to this implant. It's created this wall so the body can ignore that it's there, correct? The thought behind breast implant illness, or one of the theories being put forward, is in some patients, okay, in some women, that capsule has not effectively turned off the immune system so that the body is still having an ongoing, what I call a background response to their implant being there. Not every woman will suffer from breast implant illness, and we don't have an exact number. Is it 2 to 5%? Is it 50 to 70%? We don't know. But the thought is, or the theory that's being put forward, is that you've got this capsule that's not turning off the body's immune response. So you have a constant grumbling immune response. So I like to say to my patients, imagine like your second or third last day before you're done having a cold. You don't feel great, but you're feeling a little bit better. But then you have that every day. And over time, that's going to deplete your immune system. And you're going to start feeling the symptoms you experience.
Okay. Is there also something to say about the excess scar tissue? Because I know that's how I first came to you, was because of my hip and joint pain. I wasn't able to also lift my leg off the ground. And I saw an osteopath, and he spent some time working on my scar tissue. And after 45 minutes, he put pressure on my scar tissue and said, okay, lift your leg. And I was able to lift my leg off the ground. And so his theory was that the excess scar tissue was causing everything in my, like my, affecting my mobility in my body, and therefore affecting my hip. So is there something about the scar tissue too, that the buildup of the scar tissue that can make people feel sick or like they're in pain?
I would tend to agree with you that yes, that's possible, but these are, unfortunately, these are all theories, so we don't have a definitive answer, and that's what makes it difficult. Certainly, every woman's capsule is different, right? I've seen some that are thin and wispy. It's like taking out wet tissue paper, and then you see some that are rock hard, calcified, and you can just see the strain they're putting on the surrounding tissue. So absolutely, when you see a capsule like that, it's causing pain, it's causing issues. I would say you're probably correct. That's another theory.
And there's no way to be able to know if your implants are causing the calcification around the capsule, or if they're ruptured, other than cutting open, or are there ultrasounds or anything else you can do?
Well, with respect to ruptured, there are tests you can get. If someone comes to me and they says, okay, I've had my implants in for 10 years, I'm worried they're ruptured, at least in Canada, I'm going to order an ultrasound first, okay? That is not the gold standard. The gold standard would be an MRI, okay? Their MRI be slightly more sensitive, slightly more specific. But in Canada, I can get an ultrasound very quickly, right? In, you know, 2 to 3 months, which if you have an American audience, they're going to gag over that comment, like it should be the next day, right? But
don't get us started on healthcare system in Canada.
That's our system, right? And then if someone says, okay, well, it doesn't show rupture, I say, well, okay, let's look at the sensitivity and specificity of that test. Should we then order an MRI? Would that be an important part of your journey? And then, so for someone, yes, we do proceed to getting an MRI to determine, are they ruptured? But even with an MRI, I've gone in sometimes, MRI says negative, you get in there and it's, you know, okay, MRI say it's not ruptured, it's ruptured. But I've also seen vice versa, where MRI says it's ruptured, you get in there, not ruptured.
Is there anything in, you know, all the work that's going on to try to figure this out that's identified, anything that predisposes people to this?
Unfortunately not. Yeah. And that becomes very difficult, right? Because let's say you see a patient who wants breast augmentation. I can't tell that patient, well, you're in the category that's going to get this, right? The one thing that I think the Breast Implant Illness Group has done is they've created awareness so that patients, when they come for augment, they already want to have a discussion about breast implant illness and is what's the risk of this, right? So there's been a lot of education that the Breast Implant Illness Group has created.
And still, again, no difference for saline versus silicone.
I haven't seen a difference, no.
Really? It's so interesting.
Yeah.
So somebody comes to you and they say to you, I think that I have breast implant illness because of X, Y, and Z. And I want to get my implants removed. Do you tell them to do any sort of other sort of medical testing first, or are you just like, okay, we're ready to rock?
Well, I think a lot of time I'm their last stop on the train ride or the, whatever you want to call it, right? By the time most people have come to see me, they've seen their family doctor, and they all say, I've had lots of tests, everything has come back to as normal. A lot of patients have seen a naturopath, okay, well, we've done a lot of tests, we've adjusted a lot of things, still coming back, nothing better, right? Maybe they've seen a rheumatologist, an endocrinologist, right? I see a lot of patients with thyroid problems, Hashimoto's, low thyroid, who also have breast implant illness. So by the time most patients have gotten to me, there's nothing else to work up. They've seen all the other specialists. I don't think anybody wants to lose their breast implants, right? I think, would you agree with me, Marie? A lot of people are like, no, I like my breasts the way they are. I don't want to change this. But they've done all the work elsewhere.
Yeah, I know for myself personally and a handful of my friends who have come to see you, it's always been the last resort where we've tried absolutely everything and doctors, naturopaths, specialists are telling us that we're normal and we know our bodies, we know how we should be functioning, and we know it's not normal.
And you've exhausted all other options. Yeah, you've exactly. Been to all the places and talked to all the people and had all the tests.
So of the people who have come to see you with these symptoms, how often is it that they come to see you after and say that they're relieved of these symptoms?
I tell my patients that anecdotally, okay, about 85 to 90% of patients report feeling better.
That's significant.
That is. Now, but when I say feeling better, that doesn't mean that every symptom has left them. But they say, no, okay, this part's improved. I'm sleeping better. My memory's better. I've noticed my hair loss isn't as bad, right? But does that mean that every symptom has left them? No. But 85 to 90% of patients say that, no, I am feeling better. But that does mean that 10 to 15% say, you know, 6 months out, I'm not feeling any different. But interestingly, you would think, okay, well, I've done about 600. If 10% aren't feeling better, 60 patients might want to be re-augmented. Only about 2 or 3 have told me they want to be re-augmented. So even in the patients who say they haven't felt better, they still don't want to be re-augmented. Now, they might not come back to me and tell me this, right? So it's a biased sample size, because I think for someone who's had their implants out and want to get them back in, they may not come back to me and tell me that. If that makes sense.
Yes. No, fair enough.
Yeah. One thing I read was that the longer you have your implants in, the longer it will take for your body to relieve itself of its symptoms. So you're seeing patients for like, what, 8 weeks after their surgery? Is that the latest?
The average patient, I'm lucky if I get to see them past 8 weeks.
Yeah.
Right. I've been lucky in that a few of my patients have come back for other things years later. So I get to touch base with them. But you know, when people are happy, when their scars are looking good, they don't need to show me their breasts anymore. They're tired of showing me their breasts. Okay, Dr. Brown, you did your job. Goodbye. Thanks for your help. They just leave me.
I can say that after I had my surgery, I was prepared for the absolute worst, because I've done my research and I knew that, you know, healing could be extensive, and I just read some things, but I felt incredible. I was so bored after day one because I had so much energy and I knew I had to rest.
Yeah.
And it even changed the color of my eyes. Like, I took a picture the day before and the day after, and the whites in my eyes were brighter. And my, like I said before, my pain went away instantly. I mean, I got pregnant quite soon afterwards. So some of the other symptoms that I experienced, it will be interesting to see, because nausea, exhaustion, all of those things come with pregnancy. So it will take time. But from what I've read, a lot of people see the same relief that I experienced.
I have two questions. One unrelated, just in general for people that have breast implants. Are you at 10 years supposed to get them taken out and replaced? Is that recommended or no?
The recommendations recently changed by the FDA, so the Federal Drug Administration in the US. So this is a US comment, but typically Canadians will follow that, you know, a few months later, we'll make a new recommendation. Up until 3 months ago, it was at 10 years time, you should have medical imaging to assess the condition of your implants and then have a discussion with your doctor whether or not they should be replaced. Okay. Now it's the recommendation is at 6 years to get medical imaging, so an ultrasound to rule out rupture. So it has changed. The original 10-year recommendation was really based upon the first generation implants, which oddly enough, I have a set of them. They were handed down to me from a retiring surgeon, who were handed down to him from a retiring surgeon, still in the box, still probably sterile.
Are they made of cement?
No, they're like the original Dow Corning breast implants.
Wow.
Don't know what I'm going to do with them, except for one day when I retire, give them to the next one and say, okay, they're still in the box. You decide what to do with them. Those had a liquid silicone where if they ruptured, you would get horrendous silicone granulomas. And I've experienced patients who have had the original ones that you take out, and there's no joy in taking out those implants. There's silicone bleed, silicone gel everywhere. With the, I think we're on the fifth generation of implants. It's a cohesive gel. So if they rupture, they're not supposed to rupture in the same way. They're supposed to all kind of stay together. So they've kind of changed it. So with the old ones, yes, change them every 10 years because you never wanted to have these rupture because they leak and bleed everywhere. But the new ones, get medical imaging. But the most recent recommendation was at 6 years, get your first follow-up ultrasound. And then about every 3 years after that.
Great. Thank you.
When you've cut into people and you've seen a ruptured implant, has it held together or what have you seen?
Well, it depends upon the implant. Okay, so if I find someone who's got a 30 or 40 year old breast implant, one of the original ones, no, those have not held together. There's liquid goo everywhere. They're not fun. In the, you know, Mentor Allergan breast implants that I find ruptured, the fifth generation, the cohesive gel, also known as the gummy bear, when those have ruptured, usually they've held together not too bad. Okay, you don't have the same extracapsular silicone bleed that the first generation had. So extracapsular means the silicone has migrated outside of the protective wall. You don't see that very often. Now, the caveat is, and I made sure to mention the two manufacturers, because in Canada right now, there's really only two, and there's a third that is trying that have approval to sell implants in Canada. However, if you go to, say, Brazil, Mexico for your breast augmentation, there are about 20 to 30 manufacturers. And so there, I've taken out implants in someone who's gone away for medical tourism, right? The cost of having aesthetic surgery in Mexico and Brazil is a lot lower. And I've taken out some of those implants, and they're, you know, implants that are placed 5 years ago look like they were first generation implants where you've just got a mess.
Wow, that's really good. Wow. I've never even thought about that before. I had no idea.
Yeah. I don't think many people do think about that.
That probably is the same for butt implants too, because I think a lot of people go away for butt implants.
Yes. Well, a lot of people travel for medical tourism. And I should say that my bias is skewed, because if you have a good result, let's say you go to Costa Rica, and a lot of patients go to Costa Rica for surgery. It's a beautiful country. I'll have to go one day. If you don't have a complication, you're not coming back to see me, right? If everything goes well, you're not going to go to see your local plastic surgeon and say, look how great I look. So I only see when people come back with complications. So my bias is skewed to say, well, these are the complications that happen in these areas. And any surgeon can have a complication.
Right. Fair enough.
When I take out an implant from these countries, it's not always the Mentor Allergan that are cohesive gels. So you see these weird silicone gel bleeds that you just don't normally see.
And so that would be something, if somebody's going to go and embark on medical tourism, know the product you're getting placed in your body.
Yes, 100%. But even, and this is probably going a bit outside your topic, even in Canada, not with breast implants, but if you're going to go for cosmetic injectables, which that's a whole other topic, know what's being injected into, because I've had patients come to me with what appeared to be cancers on their lips. That was just a non-approved injectable for Canada.
Oh, God. Is that common? Like, for that to happen? I mean, I'm sure this has only happened where you've found out about it a few times, but is this something where at your local injectable, like MediSpa, they would be using?
Well, if it is a physician-directed or nurse practitioner-directed or a dentist-directed center, they're only going to buy approved injectables that are approved for in Canada. Okay? But they're expensive. And there are abilities to import things from other countries that you can find someone who's willing to inject it into. So there are people who will import injectables from non-approved sources.
So when my friend is telling me, hey, which I don't go to this place, but hey, I know someone who does really cheap Botox and filler. It's $300 for my entire face. That is a red flag.
A big red flag.
Yeah. Well, I always say to people, I've had plastic surgery myself, and people always, you know, if you've had plastic surgery, ask you, and they'll ask you the cost, and well, this person's less. I'm like, you do not cheap out.
No.
On anything to do with medical procedures.
Correct.
You go to the best, you do your homework.
Go to the best, but also get more than one opinion, right? Like, you know, ask around, but also ask, have you done this before? And do you enjoy doing this procedure?
What is your favorite procedure to do?
I don't have a favorite. I have a bunch that I really like. I like doing explants. I love doing tummy tucks. One of my favorite is to do upper eyelid blepharoplasties. It's just you just merge like function and aesthetics together, right? You take someone who's mid-50s, who's starting to look a little bit tired, you open up their eyes, they can see better, but also they look more refreshed, they can wear their makeup again, people aren't asking them while they're tired. Anyways, that's one of my favorites as well.
I'll see you for that.
Did you see Jesse in your office next week?
Yeah.
I promise I'll call first and get a proper appointment.
One of the things patients ask me a lot of is, will I be able to breastfeed after my explant?
Right. Let's talk about that. That's actually something I do want to talk about.
Yes. So I have only had one patient so far who's told me that they got pregnant afterwards and was able to breastfeed. But I've only had one patient. So N of one, I got a small sample size. So you could double my sample size, whether you can or cannot. Right. I can say, well, 100% out of two or 50% out of two.
Is that something you would have been able to see when you're like cutting me open? Is the milk ducts or like, or
no, nope? they're pretty tiny structures.
Okay.
Yeah. It's one of the most important questions I get because, mm-hmm. you get, the 28-year-old female, the 34-year-old female, even 40-year-old female, like who, okay, I want to have one more child. Will I be able to breastfeed? Should I wait? And it's a valuable discussion I have with people because this operation, in my opinion, has the ability to alter if you're able to breastfeed.
Right. Okay. One last question. What is the average cost of getting an explant surgery? Is that more expensive than putting an implant in? Does it take longer?
So it's a great question. What I charge currently, if someone comes to me, they want their explant capsulectomy, so on block or commitment to on block, I charge $8,500, but I also include in that a lower pole tightening, like a lower pole lift, or also known as a crescent lift. I have pictures on my Instagram of that if you want. And if you want a full breast lift at the same time, I'm going to charge you about $13,000 to $14,750. So it's not cheap, but it also takes a lot of time to do. And you don't want me rushing.
No,
we do not.
I'm actually, that price did not surprise me. I think that's...
Yeah.
It's a serious procedure and it's an important procedure.
Like you said, we don't cheap out.
No, we don't.
Interesting, a lot of patients will say to me, well, that is more expensive than when I had my augment. But then I have to remind patients, well, you had your augment 15 years ago. So prices have gone up.
Way up. Well, you've just been so awesome. This has been such a great conversation. We appreciate you so much.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Oh, no problem at all. Maria, it's great to see you. Jesse, pleased to meet you.
So if people want to follow you on social media or your website, can you tell everyone where they can find you, where they can connect with you?
If you want to check out kind of my work and what I do, and I don't post a lot, go to my Instagram account, Abbotsford Plastic Surgery. My website is the same name, abbotsfordplasticsurgery.com, but I don't post any of my before and afters on my website. I find Instagram, it's so instantaneous. You can have a conversation with patients, right? Like, tonight I'm getting a question from one patient about a certain operation. okay, yes, no, do you do this? And it's just more, you can, it's more interactive.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate having you on the podcast, and maybe you'll see us again soon in your office. Yeah.
Thank you. Have a good night.
You as well. Have a good evening.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. We hope you enjoyed it and learned something new and helpful.
We'll see you next Thursday. And in the meantime, be sure to rate, review, and follow along on your favorite podcast app.
And tell us more about what you want to hear on the podcast by sending a DM to our Instagram at TMM About Podcast.
Chat soon.